Hello and welcome to the MarshyCast. Thank you as always for joining me. If you so wish to do so, you can listen to me every single weekday from 10 a.m. on Express FM, FM and DAB if you live in the South Coast, or you can listen online and via our app. All over the world, doesn't matter where you live. We got a couple of cracking guests coming up this week. First up, I spoke to the legendary Fuzz Townend, who is known for being the drummer in Pop Will Eat Itself and Bentley Rhythm Ace in the 90s. However, now, of course, he is much more well known for being a presenter on Car SOS. So we're going to find out what is coming up in the latest series of the TV show. Plus, we are going to find out why so many people struggle to change a tyre. Also, my second guest is the incredibly talented Tom Ball, who was a finalist in Britain's Got Talent. He is just about to embark on a tour across the country, and his album is set to come out in May. I asked him all the questions about his tour, what we can expect, and why he has got such a deep-rooted love for the South Coast, and specifically the Isle of Wight. That's all coming up for you here on the MarshyCast. Paul Marsh here on Express, delighted to say that I have been joined by Car SOS presenter Fuzz Townend. Fuzz, thank you so much for joining me.
Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing very, very well. I'm really delighted to be talking to you, actually, because I say you're Car SOS presenter. You are not just Car SOS presenter, in inverted commas. You have had the most amazing life and the most amazing career. Drummer in Pop Will Eat Itself and Bentley Rhythm Ace. You've been a college lecturer, you've done journalism, you've owned a garage, and you are now a TV presenter. What a life you've led, sir.
Yeah, well, just say yes. That's my maxim. And then find out what it's all about later. Just jump in feet first, and then if you're in trouble, ask for help.
Well, look, if it's okay for just a split second, I want to talk about your career, certainly in the 90s with music, because with Pop Will Eat Itself and Bentley Rhythm Ace, I'm 42, so I literally just caught the tail end of all of that, and I remember. Yeah. I'm a massive Prodigy fan, and I know that you sort of worked around those guys and you toured with some amazing people. Yeah. One question, really, what was it all like? What were the 90s like?
I've got no idea. Answers on a postcard, please. I'd love to know if anybody can provide me with photographic or video evidence. I'd love to know. I know the records are out there. No, I had a great time. It was brilliant. I have to say that being in Bentley Rhythm Ace was a little bit like living in a cartoon. It's the only way that I can describe it. It was funny beyond words all the time. Just absolutely crackers. I don't know how it worked out like that, but it was a bunch of friends having a brilliant time, and it was just such great fun. And you know, I still love playing for Bentley Rhythm Ace. In fact, I've got a significant birthday coming up this year, and Bentley Rhythm Ace, including me, are going to be playing. I don't have to pay myself though.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. I love that. Yeah. That's brilliant. And isn't that really what music literally should be all about? A group of friends kind of having fun and doing whatever they want to do.
Well, that's right. I think it often works out the best. I think some of the bands that you see, who may even seem a bit po-faced, I bet even Radiohead have great fun.
You wouldn't believe it, but they probably do.
Yeah, exactly. I bet they're having a laugh a minute, but as soon as you open that door, it's like face, long face. Laughter. Open the door again, long face. Oh, there we go. But, you know, I think, it's just about finding that connection. And, you know, it can all come together brilliantly.
Oh, well, I think, so to say, that period, I think, is absolutely fantastic. And the music that you all created is amazing. I love it. But we're not, as much as I would love to talk to you probably for the next hour about that, we can't talk about that. What we're here to talk about is Car SOS, and we're here to talk about the fact, and this surprises me, the fact that so many Brits are scared to change car tyres, with half of motorists admitting to being too scared to jack up their vehicle and attempt to change a tyre. Now, I guess So I'll give you a little bit of background about myself. I've always sort of done radio, but I worked in the construction for around 20 years. So construction is all about kind of getting on and doing things yourself. And I learned at a very young age how to change a tyre on most vehicles, to be honest with you. So it kind of surprises me that a lot of people don't have the first idea about how to do and what to do.
Well, I'm not surprised, really, because let's face it, when we learn how to drive a car, we're not told any of that sort of stuff. Although nowadays, when people are learning how to drive a car, and when they're taking their tests, they may well be taken around their car and asked to point out where to fill up the washers and all that kind of stuff. So surely the logical extension of that is to know how to change a wheel. If you get a puncture, knowing how to change a wheel can get you out of a lot of bother. It might just be on your driveway in the morning, and you know, but it could be that all important meeting that you're going to have at work. Nobody likes to bowl into work when some important arrangement has been made, and they're late, and they come up with an excuse. It's always lame. It's much better to be able to get there. But I would also say, if you don't know what you're doing, don't attempt it, because you can get yourself into a lot of bother. Wasn't it somebody out of East 17 who jacked up their car on their driveway and it ran over them or something like that?
That was the story. Whether that was entirely true or not, I'm not sure.
I don't know. Allegedly, anyway.
You lived the 90s, you know.
Yeah, but well, I can imagine that happened. You know, I think that's probably happened to a lot of people, and it's probably not a lot of fun when it does happen. But if you learn how to do it, it's a great thing, and you can learn how to do it. You can learn online, but of course, certainly not all video advice is correct. And so you really need to start with the basics. RTFM. Read the flipping manual. So if you do that, if you find your car's manual, which you may find in the glove box, possibly where the locking wheel nut is, but you can read about that in the manual as well. But if you read about how to do it, it's worth having a go and practicing at the weekend. But I would always advise that you do so with somebody who knows what they're doing. Get the advice. And it gives you that little bit more, a little bit more information, a little bit more practical skill, and allows you to get out of situations that you may find yourself in. But if it happens to you at the side of the road, even if you know what you're doing, if it's a dangerous place, such as if the puncture's on the driver's side and you're on the side of the motor, you're on the hard shoulder of the motorway, or on a busy road, or even on a quiet road, don't do it. Leave it to the professionals, because they come equipped with all kinds of equipment that can do it quickly and do it safely. And that's what you need to know. But if you can learn, do learn. Often, though, your car won't have a spare, so you'll be using an inflation kit.
Yeah, that's more than ever now you get those inflation kits. I just want to tell you a very quick story that hopefully put a smile on your face. So I was out with my wife one day, kids in the back and everything else like that, and we got a flat tyre. So I jumped out to start doing everything. And I said, "Where's your locking wheel nut?" And she said, "Oh, it's at home on the bookshelf." I said, why is it at home on the bookshelf? And she said, well, in case anybody steals the car, I don't want them to be able to change a tyre. that's a great idea. The only problem is I need to change the tyre now. So in that situation, we did have to call somebody out.
The other thing is, though, you knew where it was.
Yeah, exactly. We knew exactly where it was. And when the company dropped us off back home and unloaded the car, I could change the tyre.
Yeah, there you are.
Now, they have another piece of information has been released, which I love as well, is the top 10 celebrities that motorists would most want with them in a breakdown. I love some of these. So you've got things like Lewis Hamilton and Jenson Button. Yeah. Now, if you got a flat tyre, I'm not exactly sure what these guys could do, because they're not in the pit team. They don't know how to change one in 3 seconds, unfortunately. And if you got a flat tyre, you can't drive away either. They've got The Rock and Jason Statham. Maybe they can lift the car without a jack. Maybe.
Yeah, possibly so. Possibly so. I think the rock would be better for lifting it. And Jason Statham, I don't know what would it. I suppose he could look menacing, couldn't he?
Make sure the cars swerve around him if you stand
yeah,
at the back
right.
and
Yeah,
look a
yeah.
bit menacing. Yeah,
traffic control.
The other thing, I mean, we were talking about spares, and now you're kind of getting a kit. A lot of people don't even know where their spares are, do they?
No, that's right. So again, it's RTFM. Read the flipping manual. Get to know your car. And actually, if you do read the car manual, you may also find out what all those other buttons that are on the dashboard, you might find out what they do, because I'm sure that half of people don't know what half of the buttons do, or half of the or where half of the functions are in their car. So it's a great thing to do. Just find out about it. Manuals now are pretty thick. So surely there must be some information in there that's useful.
Do you think it's because cars are so technologically advanced these days that they literally tell us, you know, if the tyre is low, if there's something wrong, they tell us. Do you think that's why people don't bother to learn about their car?
Yeah, well, you've got tyre monitoring systems, and they are a great thing, but they cannot get you out of every situation. They may activate about 2 seconds before you've got a complete flat if you get a sudden puncture. So that's not going to help you out much. You know that you've got the puncture, and you're stuck already. But I think a lot of people do they've become complacent, because cars do an awful lot for us now. Yesterday evening I went up to the local supermarket in a 1929 Austin. And that doesn't do very much for you, apart from it gets you out of the walking bit. But you know, it doesn't go very much faster than that. But you know, I love using things like that. And again, you know, that's a 94-year-old car, 95-year-old car that is in almost daily use. It would be in daily use if I didn't have to go that far.
Oh, I love it.
You know, so that sort of thing's great. But modern cars they take a lot of the thought power out of driving. And in a way, that's perhaps good, because it means that we can concentrate more on the actual process of driving rather than double declutching, getting the engine revs right to match the gears and all that kind of stuff, and doing hand signals and stuff like that, which I have to do because it doesn't even have brake lights, my Austin. So I'm slowing down, and people are going, I'm doing the hand signal for slowing down, and people are going, what's that?
Why is
what's
he
that?
Trying to take off?
Does he mean, why is he trying to take off? Or does he mean overtake? And you know, people say about hand signals as well, you know, nobody knows about hand signals. Well, you should do, because kids on bikes use hand signals. So you need to learn that. It's on a serious note. But yeah, cars today are technologically brilliant. And eventually they are going to take the idiots out of the equation by becoming driverless.
Yeah.
And I know people get a little bit anti that at the moment, but I think there will probably be fewer accidents with driverless vehicles than there are currently with driver filled vehicles, because let's face it, a bit of a your automated system is not going to get distracted by, oh look, that looks like a good fish and chip shop.
No, this text message that's come in, or changing the radio station, or whatever it is. No, there's no distractions there, is there?
Yeah, well, there's no change in the radio stations from Express FM.
That's what we like to hear. Oh, you've done your research. Well done, sir. Now, Fuzz, your new series of Car SOS begins. What can people expect from that?
Okay, so it's on National Geographic Channel on Thursdays at 8 o'clock. And we have 10 more stories of wonderful people and the people who've nominated them. So caring, sharing stories of families and friends. And squashed in between, in a little sandwich there, there's a rotten old car in the middle that we take secretly without the owner's knowledge, and squirrel it away, take it to the workshop, and restore it to its former glory, or even in some cases to a completely new type of use, and then present it back, fait accompli. The people don't know anything about it, and suddenly They're having a great time with their friends and family. Their car's all done, and Tim and I can walk off into the sunset, pat each other on the back, and allow the people to have a great time together. And you know, it's a great privilege to be able to enjoy those moments as well with those deserving owners and the people who love them so much.
Well, look, I'm sure the series is going to be another massive success. So I don't need to wish you luck, but I do wish you luck anyway. So, Fuzz, thank you so much for talking to me. I really do appreciate it. Like I said, I could talk to you all day. We don't have the time, but thank you, thank you, thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
That's been great.
It's Paul Marsh here on Express. Delighted to say that I am joined by Tom Ball. Tom, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
Of course, most well-known for Britain's Got Talent, but also America's Got Talent.
Yeah, did AGT All-Stars last year, and then BGT I've done twice now. I did it in 2022 and 23. It was great.
Now, I have to ask, I mean, obviously, I know as a performer, you dream and you aspire to perform in front of as many people as you possibly can. What I would love to know is when you're on that stage, obviously in a TV studio, I know there is an audience there, but in a TV studio, do you think about how many people are actually watching this on TV, or is it literally one foot in front of the other?
Definitely one foot in front of the other. I think if I thought about the millions of people behind that lens, I'd freak. I could not do it. I can only focus on the people in that room. Otherwise, I think I'd have a nervous breakdown.
Well, I know. Do you know what the funny thing is? I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and obviously, as a radio presenter, we do a lot of hosting at festivals and other bits and pieces like that. And I've always said I would far rather do that in front of thousands upon thousands of people, and I just can't see any faces at all, rather than maybe 100 people, and you can see every single person looking into your eyes.
Absolutely, it becomes so much more intimate.
Yeah.
If you can see them and see their facial reactions, and you start questioning whether people are even enjoying it because someone does a yawn and you go, oh my goodness, they hate me.
See, now with me, it's more people turning to their friends going, who is this guy? Who's this guy here? Now, you are coming to Eastleigh very soon. You're going to be at the Concord on Sunday, the 28th of April. Your UK tour starts soon. You must be really, really excited.
I am so looking forward to it. It starts in 2 days' time in Peterborough. And of course, we're coming back to the Concord Club in Eastleigh. I love that venue. I've been fortunate to play there twice already. And so I'm back there for a third time, having a fantastic night with me, my band, playing songs that, you know and love, and definitely some original material in there as well.
Well, yeah, because you do so many different bits and pieces. What can people expect from your live show?
Songs from stage and screen is a definite given. You know, that whole album, which is songs from stage and screen as well, is going to be in there. You're going to hear exclusives on that night, from original material to Bond tracks to soul and pop. It's going to be a fun-filled evening, and I can't wait for people to join me.
Yeah, well, I'm excited already for you. That's how it is at the moment.
Thank you very much.
It's infectious. I'm excited for you. I want the people to have a good time.
Yeah, me too.
Now, your debut album, Curtain Call, is on the way. However, it has just been delayed, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been delayed to the 24th of March. 24th of May. It is a disappointment, but unfortunately, sometimes these things happen. Distribution and manufacturing and production, just slight delay there. But I promise it is worth the wait. I've been fortunate enough to listen to the album now, and I'm incredibly proud of it.
The best things come to those who wait, as they say.
Absolutely. And I've got to say, the response online from the delay has been really lovely, everyone understanding and really supportive, so that has made me feel incredibly warm inside.
Now, so we're in Portsmouth, just down the road from Eastleigh. Obviously, recently you were down this way as well, because you spent a little bit of time on holiday on the Isle of Wight.
Ah, the Isle of Wight, my favourite place in the world. I've been visiting there since I was 6 weeks old, and the Isle of Wight is the best place.
What makes it so great? Why do you love it so much?
It's like you're going abroad, but you're not, because you've got to go on the ferry for 45 minutes. And it's just so peaceful. It's a slower pace of life. It's just relaxed, time to breathe, fresh air, good walking, good dog walks. It's just really good fun.
Well, there's something about the Isle of Wight recently because Florence Pugh has been telling Zendaya that obviously they're both in June together at the moment. And she recently told her that the closest place that she can think of in England is there's a beach on the Isle of Wight that she said is very similar with the sand and the stones and everything else like that. So apparently she's going to bring her down to Portsmouth, stick her on the hovercraft and take her over to the Isle of Wight.
Quickest way to get to the Isle of Wight, the hovercraft.
Can you see Florence Pugh and Zendaya over on the island?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If they're there, I'll visit as well.
Yeah, you and me both. Now, your life and your career has just transformed and taken off over the last few years, hasn't it? I mean, starting as a teacher, I think any performer, doesn't matter what job they do to pay the bills, etc., you always have that glint in your eye. There's always that something you want to do. But what was it that made you go from... I don't want to say just a teacher because there's literally no such thing as just a teacher. Teachers are amazing. But what made you take that next step and apply for Britain's Got Talent?
I simply saw an advert. I saw an advert saying submit some videos and you might be within a chance of appearing on BGT. And we were about to go into our next year of teaching. It was around just before September when I saw the advert. And I've been playing with it for a couple of weeks and going, do I submit? No, I shouldn't. I'm a teacher. That's wrong. And then I made the decision of why not? Let's submit. Let's see what happens. If nothing happens, it's fine. I'm happy as a teacher.
You've got a story to tell, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And literally, I think it was a couple of hours after me submitting, I got a phone call inviting me to the first audition. And so my life changed very, very quickly from that moment.
Now, we know that when it comes to TV, there is a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Obviously, you probably were recording the show for a long time. Were you still working as a teacher while you were recording?
Yeah, absolutely. So we recorded in January, the first audition. And they record all of the first auditions until the lives, obviously, because the lives are live.
Yeah.
And I had to keep that under wraps. I didn't tell anyone other than my head teacher and my fiance at the time. And I kept that incredibly quiet. And then the first audition came out. Life as a teacher changed completely. Suddenly the students were watching me on TV and then coming to my classes.
And actually paying attention and listening, I would imagine.
Finally, actually paying attention. And then we did the final. And after the final, there were 7 weeks left of the school year. And I went back and I taught for the final seven weeks.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing because so many people wouldn't have done that.
My head teacher did come to me and said on that first day, I can't believe you're here.
Yeah.
Which, for me, I felt like it was my duty to finish that year for my students, for my GCSE students. It was important that they had that consistency.
That must have been lovely, though. That must have been really, really nice.
It was a really special 7 weeks of teaching of talking to my students, trying to inspire them as much as possible and just wrapping the year up in such a lovely way.
And I hate to say it, but I know we laughed and we joked about this earlier, but I bet they did listen to you far more afterwards than what they did before because, as we all know what kids are like, beforehand it would have been, oh, sir, yeah, all right, sir. And then afterwards, they literally would have been hanging on to every single word you said.
I think by going on the programme and doing as well as I did, I kind of proved myself to them, potentially a little bit of I'm someone that wants to be here with them. You know, as we said, I could have not gone back for those seven weeks, but I made the choice to be with them, to continue to teach them. And I hope that came across to them, that they mattered to me.
No, I think that's a really lovely, lovely story. And you're an amazing person for doing that because it just goes to show you that you really care because so many people wouldn't have done that. So many people would have found their fame and gone and not even looked back. So the fact that you did that, I think, is amazing. I just want to finish on a couple of quotes, which I've come up with online, which I think are fantastic. Simon Cowell, who has created unknown amounts of stars, simply sensational, he said. You know, that must put a massive smile on your face. And Amanda Holden, who, let's face it, you know, I won't say what name, but she's on a breakfast show of another station. She kind of knows what she's talking about as well. One of the best singers that we have had in 16 years. That just is amazing.
It blows my mind. And with that particular quote from Amanda, I remember hearing it on the first audition and then I didn't believe it for about 4 months. I told my mum, I was like, I think Amanda said this, but There's no way she made that comment. And it wasn't until it was actually aired where I was like, oh my goodness, Amanda actually told me that I was one of the best singers she'd heard in 16 years. That is the highest praise I could ever ask.
Amazing. And then, you know, you've gone on to do all sorts of other bits and pieces. You've worked with the Overtones. How was that, you know, especially over the Christmas period and everything?
Oh, it was incredible to go on there. They did a 27-date tour last Christmas, and to be invited to be their special guest support was a dream come true, to tour around the world, meet some lovely new people, and become so close with the boys was just amazing. I had a really amazing time, and I had my dad with me. What could be better?
Your last song, Winter Song, was co-written by Gary Barlow, the legend that is Gary Barlow.
He's in the room.
Now, I know that obviously Gary probably wrote this song and then he found his way to you. But once you had picked the song up, did you spend any time with Gary? Did you kind of sit with him and talk about the song?
So it was co-written with Gary Barlow and Elliot Kennedy. And it was Elliot I had a really close connection with. I was in the studio songwriting for my album with him, and he stopped the session and said, Tom, I'd like to play you a song. Of course, you say yes to Elliot. And I listened to Winter Song and I fell in love with it straight away. And he offered it to me. And then it was only when I said yes that he revealed that actually it was co-written by Gary. So he gave Gary a quick ring and said, are you happy for me to give this song to Tom? To which they both said they'd been waiting a couple of years to find the right voice for this song. And so I'm so honoured.
Oh, wow. That's just amazing, isn't it? Again, you know, all these praise from all these legends. And if somebody like Gary Barlow, who, let's face it, probably knows somebody or two in the industry that he could have given it to,
That
after a couple of years, he said that you were the right person for the song. That, again, is just such an honour.
It is. It's a real honour. And I'm so pleased with how the song kind of sounds. And I'm incredibly proud of it.
Well, look, Tom, I know that your album has been delayed, and I know that must be incredibly frustrating for you. But when the album comes out, I'm sure it is going to be an absolute success. But in the meantime, we get to see you live. You're going to be at the Eastleigh at the Concord on Sunday, the 28th of April. I know the show is going to be an amazing success, but I just want to wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. It's really appreciated. And thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you very much for listening to the Marshy Cast. It is always greatly appreciated. We are out every single week if you want to keep tabs on the podcast. But like I said at the start, if you want to listen to me every single weekday from 10 a.m, just find all the various different ways to tune into Express FM, as I am on every weekday from 10 a.m. Lots more interviews, some local, some national, lots of different games, lots of different features and tidbits and everything else like that, all on the weekday show that you won't get in the podcast. So feel free to tune in every single day from 10 a.m. Thank you as always. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. We can take over the world one podcast at a time.